This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box, the educational podcast for coaches, players, and parents from all over the world, where we bring the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. I want to welcome you to another great show. We are going to continue on a great series of going overseas, going into other sports. We are going across to Europe to one of the best teaching places in the world, not only in baseball, but in all kinds of sports. And we're going to introduce to you in a minute one of our guests that we will have this time, and then we'll continue with other guests later on. Don't forget, check us out on Facebook, Baseball Outside the Box, also Twitter at Baseball Out. We've got a lot of great stuff on there, and we're going to tell you about our guest and a lot of the great things he has. And one of the things I'm going to tell you right now is that we are traveling to Holland. Yes, Holland in Europe, one of the top baseball countries in the world, and also one of the top developers of sports. And that's what makes this podcast very interesting, because our guest has a great background. Before we begin, I also want you to know Holland is, in my opinion, again, you can take my opinion, you've heard me say many times, one of the best coaching programs in the world, along with Canada and Australia. I believe they're the top three in the world. Now, there's other coaching programs that are good, but I believe they're the top three. And you will know why once we start talking to our guest. Now, I want to give you a quote from our guest, and then we're going to get into a little intro, and then we'll bring him onto the show. The quote, and he could tell us later if it was his quote or somebody else's quote, but I got it from his area on his Twitter, and it said, "Creating the highly gifted athletes means putting them in an environment that challenges the athlete, and mistakes can be made to grow. How you respond to those challenges and errors as a coach is crucial." And that's what we're going to talk about. His name, Martin Niehoff. Now, let me tell you, Martin he travels around the world talking to coaches, training coaches, working with coaches. He's also with the Dutch national team. He played 9 years as a pitcher with the Dutch major league team. He's a talent coach for the Dutch teams. He's a lecturer, and I know I'm going to mess this up, and I'll have him correct it. Fonts University. He's a specialist in perception, action, motor learning, and control. He was responsible for the Dutch baseball talent program from the ages of 12 to 18, six academies, a national team under the age of 16, which is their AA, and a national team under 19, which is their AAA. That group consisted of over 200 athletes. Now, I also got to tell you, he is a keynote speaker, and he's a consultant with Pro Sports, and was very interesting. He went down to Pirates camp, and he was the guest speaker there with the major league team to a lot of the coaches there. And he also met with the assistant general manager and the director of minor league operations, talking about their skill development, how they work with athletes in Holland. He is going to be speaking at the Skill Acquisition Summit held at the Florida Baseball Ranch. That clinic right now, I wish I could be there. I'm going to be in New Zealand. I'll explain that in a minute. There's over already 130 coaches from around the U.S. and the world attending this seminar. Not just that, 13 Major League Baseball organizations. We're going to ask Martin about that. He will give you some information, because it's not too late to show up. You've got to get to that. And our good friend Ron Wolfer with the Texas Baseball Ranch will be there, because it's being hosted at the Florida Baseball Ranch. Two great facilities here in the U.S., and you're going to hear some great speakers there. So you could also reach Martin. I'm going to give you his Twitter, and you got to follow Martin on his Twitter, because he has unbelievable things on there, videos, ideas. Now, I got to give you a little hint. You're going to need to translate some of the stuff, because he uses some pretty high technical words, and that's what we're going to talk about here also on the show. But you can reach Martin on Twitter at Martin, MartinTijn. Niehoff, Nijhoff. All right, let me welcome my good friend Martin Niehoff. Martin, how you doing, man?
Hey, Pete. Thanks, man. Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm getting ready for the trip to the States. We're leaving Thursday, so I'm very excited. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a privilege to have you on. I know we've been trying to do this for a while. You travel a lot internationally. I was just in Panama for the 15U World Cup, got a chance to be with the Dutch team there, 15U team, great coaches, great athletes. Boy, you guys are really doing a great job with these kids. And that's why I wanted you to come on to the show, because I know you've been dealing with a lot of great experts in other fields that makes you a better teacher, instructor, and coach. But also your research and your background and what you do is outstanding. I'm going to warn you ahead of time, I'm a simple person. So I've spent 25 years with Tom House. And one thing I always told Tom House, Tom, coaches are simple. Give them simple words. Give them simple explanations. Let them, understand it right away. Because I know sometimes we all try to get a little too technical, and sometimes it's tough to understand. So, again, it's a privilege to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you, and I'll do my best to keep it simple.
No, I know you will. I know. I thought I'd throw that out. Now, here's where I want to start. I want you to tell us a little bit about the Dutch program, because I know the Dutch program when it comes to the coaches program, and I think it's one of the best in the world. You guys have really done a great job at the grassroots level. But tell us what you do with the Dutch team, what makes it so special, and some of the new things you guys are introducing or have been introducing in your sport there.
Okay. We have 20,000 people playing baseball and softball, and there are four academies. There were six, but we got it, cut it down to four, and those four are regioned in are situated in the most dense regions. And they train 5-6 times a week with a professional staff from 12 to 15 and from 15 to 18. So every regional academy has two teams, and they play a competition against each other and only against each other. So if we want to change anything, we can do it right now. Let's say let's put in a pitch count or whatever. The next day it's done. Out of those four academies, there's a national academy above that, and that is in Amsterdam. And the best kids from the regional academies, they're being asked to come and live in Amsterdam on their own from 16 on to prepare them for life at college or in pro ball. And they train 9 times a week. And I run that program I'm the head of that program. And I also talk to the four regional academies about, what they should do and strategical planning and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. So you guys, what's great is you guys, you're small enough where you can organize things, make changes. Now, tell us about what your major goal is. I know you're one of the coaches, but you also implement the program. When it comes to skill development, what are some of the things that you believe you're doing differently that's, producing results? Because obviously the Dutch program is producing results when it comes to players. So give us some idea, some of the things that you're working on.
So I think the biggest difference is that we don't repeat all the time the same thing, but we give a lot of variation into the program or into different exercises. And they have to learn from those variations to make their skill better. So we're not hitting off a tee 100 times in a row, but we throw balls at them with different speeds, different angles. So they learn from all those. I call it it's a big puzzle, and they have to solve the puzzle all the time. So in the end, they will know what they have to do all the time. And it doesn't matter what the environment gives them, but they also learn what parts in their body can adjust to differences in the environment. So let's say a fastball or a curveball, what are the things that they always have to do? Those fastball that is inside and the curveball is outside, what do I have to do differently to hit each ball in my body? Mm-hmm. And that's a combination of hips turning in and the upper torso bending over a little bit or not. And we try to teach that subconsciously. So it goes too fast to, try to think how you have to do it. They have to experience it. So that's where creativity comes in. And they just have to solve that problem. The thing is that there has to be a clear end result. They have to be they should be able to measure if they hit the ball well or not. Because if there's no feedback, knowledge of result feedback, then they won't learn anything.
You know, and that's what I love what you guys are doing, Martin. Because, you know, one of the things, baseball is a very traditional sport. And you know, one of the things that happens a lot is, you know, we teach the way we've been taught in the past, and things are starting to change. You know, it's been about 4 or 5 years now with some changes. And, you know, now that we're, you know, with the technology and the internet and different teaching skills and different teaching ways around the world, things are coming up where we can make some changes in the game of baseball. When you talk about, let's take the hitting that you were discussing. When you talk about hitting off the tee 40, 50 times in the row, explain that, why the process is slower compared to, I believe, if I say this correctly, where you might hit off the tee 4 or 5 times, but then you might do something else different and then come back to that again.
Yeah, so you need to have, how do we call it? Let me check. Solution space. Mm-hmm. Because to hit the ball, you cannot hit the ball at one spot. And what you're doing when hitting the ball off a tee is you're hitting the ball off one spot. And it's a aiming task that you're doing. Like, let's say, when you throw darts, that's an aiming test as well. Mm-hmm. But in baseball, you have to intercept a moving object through space. And that's an interceptive timing task. So those are two totally different things that you have to do. So the transfer from a batting tee towards the real life situation is almost none. So if you need to create space, solution space to hit the ball. So let's say an outside pitch, and there's a lot of graphs out there that you see contact points of different batters or the same batter even, and they're all different little spots. It's you have to train that solution space, and that solution space is where you can train that with the incoming ball, with the interceptive timing test. Let's say just a thrown ball, you have to time that, and you cannot hit that at the same spot all the time. The perception, what you see and how you perceive it and how you time it, is connected to the way you move and the way you hit the ball. So if you take that apart from each other, that works totally less than when you train it together. The problem is the instant result is not there. Because in the beginning it takes a little longer to find a solution, and it's so easier to hit off a tee because you take away the whole perception part. Sure. So it might look like if you hit off a tee that it works better, but if you go back to the game and you see 95 miles an hour coming in on different locations and also different pitches, so all of a sudden that what you were working on isn't working anymore.
Sure. Now let's take an example. Let's say, if I'm working on an inside pitch, can I hit 4 or 5, you know, balls off the inside pitch and then go to a thrown ball inside pitch?
Well, there's no decision making in there. So right. We can go back to putting a tee on the inside, and then you have to turn in my hips more. Okay, I feel that, and now I have to go back into a situation where there's a fastball inside coming, but also outside.
Yeah.
So because I have to, the trajectory of the ball is coupled to trajectory of the ball coming in on the inside, I have to turn in my hips more, and the trajectory of the ball outside, I have to turn in my hips a little less. Those two have to be coupled all the time and also with each other. So if you train that totally separately, it won't transfer. So you can hit the ball off a tee on the inside, but then when you go back to after 5 batting tee hits, go back to the other drill, then I would put immediately in a decision making part.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, is it a ball or a strike? Is it inside, outside? Is it high, low? And then you see if what you thought was working on the betting tee is still working with all these variables in there.
Sure. And interesting, you mentioned the body going to reorganize. So I remember, a lot of times when I was younger, I was just doing it myself, and sooner or later I'd figure out, what the correct way to do it instead of actually teaching it. You said that the body will reorganize itself according to the skill it's trying to accomplish.
Yeah, but there always has to be a clear end result.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to get feedback if you did it right or not from the ball that you hit or not. So if it's too vague, and this is the problem, if it's too vague, there won't be any learning. So it has to be very precise if it's right or wrong what you did. So the intrinsic feedback that you get from inside of your body, the feeling that you had, I was on time, I was too late, or I felt it on the fat part of the bed, or I hit it off small part of the bed, and I feel the things going through my hand. That you have to feel. To make to keep searching for the right answers, you're solving that puzzle.
Yeah, and I really really liked it. And I'll tell you why, because the next question I was going to add, there's less teaching, but like you said, there's an end result, so the body figures it out. Now let me ask you, while you're doing a specific skill, let's say we're using hitting as an example, but you could use it for pitching or anything else you like. Yeah. Let's say the youngster or the athlete is doing a specific task. He knows what the end results should be. Where does the coach fit in as far as the feedback he gives them or any assistance?
It's huge, but it's different than people think it will be.
Right, right. Traditionally.
So we have to be very creative in creating an environment that helps them at where they are at that point. So let's say we need to work on his finish of the pitch. He hits the ball and needs to extend through the ball and then keeps rotating. So, he dissipates all the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that he doesn't do that well. Now, we have to come up with situations where he has to do it that way and that he feels it that way. So we should not say to him, you need to do this and this. We create an environment where he feels it. So we are very important for them because we can make their learning quicker.
Mm-hmm.
If we do it right without telling them what to do.
Yeah.
So let's say he needs to have a clear end result. And he needs to, like I said, to contact through the ball and then keep rotating around his X to dissipate the energy. So you can hang a dangled cord behind him that he has to touch after the swing. And he needs to have two hands on the bat, which means he turns his shoulders all the way through because otherwise he cannot touch that dangled cord that is hanging behind him.
Mm.
And that dangled cord that is hanging behind him should be touchable, but it has to be a challenge. He has to, do the movement big. Otherwise, he won't touch it. Well, if you do it like that, we just create an environment that is, challenging. We don't tell him what to do. We just tell him, you have to hit that cord behind you after you hit the ball. And you see then that they all of a sudden start moving way better. And if the finishing of the hit is well done, and I can dissipate energy away over all my joints, that means that my bat speed can be higher as well because it's safe to do.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, it's creative, which I love because it gets kids thinking. It's interesting. It keeps their attention, and it's fun at the same time. And when is a good time, Martin, to start kids in this process? I mean, when is there a certain age? Can they just start the earlier the better, the younger the better?
Yeah. The earlier the better. Yeah, totally. And if you look at kids and how they move and what they do and when they go and play outside, they do this all the time. Mm-hmm. But when they go to a sport, we try to control everything. And you know, their creativity goes down and they learn less quicker because we are trying to dump all our knowledge on them. And what we think is right, right? So what we see is probably right, but just to tell them directly what to do, and then they have to translate that into movement where their attention can only be at one thing. So let's say if there's a ball coming with 80 miles an hour towards me and I have to think about my elbow and my front knee and my front foot and what they all have to do and I have to hit the ball, it's impossible. So the earlier the better. Kids do it, they love it. And what they get in a practice is a lot of variations, so they don't get bored, and they, you know, they keep involved as well. Schulhorn, he invented, let's say, the chaos training, how you call it in the States. It's called differential learning. He said to me, I had a lecture of 2 days with him, and at one point he said, okay, when you put a kid that is two, you want to put him to sleep, you know, you're going to read a bedtime story that he already knows because his brain gets turned off because he know what's coming and then he can go to sleep easily. Well, if that is your training philosophy and learning for sports, then we're in the wrong business.
Yeah, that makes sense. And let's take this to another area. Let me ask you this. When we're talking about whether it's throwing, let's take throwing, for instance. You know, a lot of times we try to manage how they throw, and they throw always in the same spot. I mean, aren't we better off taking young kids and teaching them to throw from different positions, different angles, different ways, so the body kind of coordinates itself?
Yeah, totally. As long as they throw it at a certain spot. So they have to see if what they're doing, if they hit the spot or not. Because if they don't hit their spot, they will make an adjustment. And that's how they find their own, you know, perfect technique. This is interesting. If you look at major league hitters or major league pitchers, they all kind of do a lot of stuff the same. But they went through that whole process in finding out what works and what doesn't work. And in the end, there's only one solution. But they have to go through that whole process themselves. We cannot just tell them, oh, you got to do it like this. If that was the case, then we had a lot of people playing in the major leagues if it was that simple.
Yes. Martin, let's take I can see here some coaches out there, including myself, saying, okay, now I might have a youngster who's a pitcher who's throwing strikes, but necessarily does that mean, you know, when it comes to body movements, they're doing it correctly, or is it their athleticism allowing them to do it, even though they might be going in the wrong direction when they're throwing a baseball?
Yeah, that's a problem. They found a way that and probably a wrong way, like you said. But it works to a certain extent to them. If you want to correct an error, you have to make what you think is wrong so unstable that they cannot perform it with doing it like that. And then they have to find a new solution and create new stability to be successful. So if they are teaching, if they're throwing strikes, you have to make the exercise harder so they cannot get away anymore with that error. And then they will find something new. Then they will open up everything to look at new options.
Now, are you doing that? Martin, are you doing that and not explaining what the error is, that you want it to just kind of correct itself? Or do you tell the...
That's a great question. And it's I don't know yet because the problem is that all the kids that we get are used to the other training.
Right.
So if we don't explain them anything, they'll look at me like, well, you're an idiot. So what we... They do. So what we do a lot is we explain what and why we do it. but not into detail on movement analysis, because then they will just go internally again and think about everything that they're doing.
Yes.
Well, they're not supposed to do that. So, yeah, it's a tough situation at this time where we're at in sports, because, and it doesn't only goes for baseball, it goes for a lot of different sports as well. We're so internally focused on how to do a perfect movement. We think it's a perfect movement, and we try to tell them how to do it. They're used to that, and this is like 180 degrees the other way. So there has to be some explaining, yeah, because they will look at you like you're nuts, yeah.
You know what? But well said, because anytime there's an adjustment to make, especially in the game of baseball where it's been traditional, the teaching has been traditional for many years. I go back 30 years at a baseball school. We taught the same thing over and over and over again. I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that the changing needs to happen. The change needs to happen. It will happen little by little, and sometimes the less we talk, the better. I'm glad you said that. I'll tell you why, because I know in the U.S. it happens a lot. Not only does it happen by us, the coaches, but also it helps, you know, I'm glad you brought it up, because it happens with the parents. And I think, in my opinion, the learning comes in three prongs, and comes with parents, coaches, and players. They all have to understand this. So that way we're all on the same page. So that's why I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, parents are very important, and we try not to, you know, people try to stay away from them, but I would say that you have to include them.
Yep.
You have to make them part of the learning process. And if you tell them that they're a big part of their kids' learning process, and this is our philosophy, and it will only get better if you support that. I think a lot of parents out there will embrace that for sure. Okay. It's funny. We did a study with the university in Amsterdam, and they mic'd up six pitching coaches in our academies. And after a month, you know, they wrote everything out, and then they classified if it was an internal focus, creating internal focus, so non-performance feedback, or it was an external focus, or it was organizational stuff or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been doing this for 5 years, right? And still 65% of all our teaching cues work internal. But then they ask the kids as well, well, you know, what do you think will work the best? And they, like, I think out of 160 comments, 112 were, well, give me some internal feedback. And, you know, if there's a coach there, again, that doesn't tell you anything, but just creates environments and tells them, oh, now you do this and now you do that, and I get better, as opposed to a coach that tells him a lot about how he should do the movement, you know, the kid will think that last guy is the best coach because he knows so much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not about that. So, you know, it's a big problem. And I think explanations, short explanations to parents, to kids, you know, a 10-minute presentation. And you'll have to live by what you say all the time as well.
Well, Martin, the other area I wanted to discuss is, because you and I, you know, we're very lucky to be able to travel internationally and experience the global game, which is a bigger game than we think sometimes. We're in a local area. One of the things we see a lot, you know, you see a lot of Latin players, and I've spent a lot of time in the Dominican and other countries, and, you know, you see they play the game and they figure it out sooner or later, and they develop instincts. You called,
and,
go ahead,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, those instincts, you know, it's just the environment that they're in. If you look, you know, I've been a lot to Curacao, and if you see, you know, the fields over there, they're terrible, which is very good, because when the ball rolls over there, it bounces in all kinds of directions. So they have to anticipate all the time. And nobody tells them that. They just, you know, see. And in the, you know, in the end, they look for generic principles of movement, mm-hmm, that, you know, will fit every environment. So 10 years in a situation like that, where kids play outside and they play on bad fields and they come up with their own games, and you know, we have I think, yeah, we have the highest percentage of MLB players, if you look at Curacao as a country, in the major league. it's one on 20,000 plays in the major league. And then the number two country is the Dominican Republic, which has one in 125. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the difference, you know, environment, I talked about at the fields and the play and the time outside. And, you know, they have great weather, but they also have the Dominican Republic. I think the biggest difference between Dominican Republic and Curaçao is that, you know, in Curaçao, they have our school system, the Dutch school system, and they learn English. Sure. And they speak very well English, and they speak Spanish, and they speak Dutch, and they speak Papiamento. Mm-hmm. So when they go to the States, they don't get lost in translation, right? Because, you know, they can get along with everybody because they speak so many languages. And I think that's those combination of factors makes it that they're so good.
Yeah, you know, and they have obviously they also have the benefit of you guys, you know, working with them as along with their coaches down there. And I think that's a big factor. Let me ask you this. When it comes to, let's take that training, the Dominican, you know, workouts, where sometimes you go down there, you know, they're just playing on their own. There's not a lot of coaching going on. What's the risk factor when it comes to injury if you go too far to that end and there's not some teaching?
Yeah, that's, again, a great question. That's why if you are a movement expert, you will identify early that it has to be different, and then you create an environment where they learn it. If they keep doing what they're doing and it's wrong, but they have success with it, yeah, well, eventually something is going to break.
Yeah.
It depends on how many hours you do it. Time spent, athletic ability, mobility, stability of your body. So, you know, we say here you can't make a Ferrari out of a Volkswagen. So you have to have some talent in there, some DNA, let's say it like that. But I think the rest is, you know, environment is there a chance that you meet people that, you know, help you in the right way? Or are the circumstances like a special combination of circumstances like in Curaçao? So there's luck, there's environment, there's DNA.
Sure.
And all that whole mixture will make if you become very good. And, you know, a coach is crucial in that regard, I think.
You know, also, let's take... I know it's a podcast, so it's not visual, but let's take a particular skill. Let's take pitching or throwing, or give us an idea of a youngster doing something incorrect and you making that adjustment. How would you make that adjustment to kind of explain that a little bit? If you can take a particular, skill in itself.
Well, so if you look at somebody that throws across his body a lot, you know, there can be some, you can step a little bit out of the line like Chris Sale does.
Yes.
But if it gets too far, then you have a real problem, you know, on the elbow if your hip is not mobile enough. So this is funny because when I was 18, I was coaching as well, but I didn't know all the stuff. So we were indoors and you have all these lines on the floor and then you say, okay, you're stepping across your body. So, okay, can you step on this line? Yes. Okay, do it 10 times. No, he did it 10 times. Now throw the ball to the catcher. Well, where is his attention? His attention is fully at the catcher because he wants to throw a strike. So what's he doing? He's stepping across his body again because, you know, he moves subconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, this is a great example. What can we do with that? Well, you can let him step even further across and then he won't throw a strike anymore to teach him, to let him feel that. But you can also put a chair there that he cannot step there anymore. So he has to step left of the chair. Mm. Or you say step all the way to the left side. So you put obstacles there. And a lot of times the stepping across your body comes from your back leg. if you collapse through your knee on the back leg, you will go out and away instead of straight to the target. So a lot of times it's a back leg problem is connected to the front leg problem. Mm. So you have to be doing analysis of that, and then you take a TheraBand. If he does what I was just saying, that he collapses on his back leg, uh-huh. Take a TheraBand behind his knee. And then, you're standing, you're facing him, and have the TheraBand behind his knee, and you pull the TheraBand to you, so you basically enhance the error. So you pull the knee towards you with the TheraBand, and then you say, hey, I don't want that I can pull that leg towards me. So what he does is automatically he stabilizes his knee and his ankle, because he will push back. And then when he goes forward, I release one side, and then he moves straight into the catcher, in the direct line, and he doesn't step across his body anymore. So there, and this is what you have to. This is tough, because you have to have so many ways of looking at the problem, and then also have 15 different exercises. To give it to him, because the one might work and the other doesn't work, and then you have to change it all the time. And I think that's the art of coaching.
And that's what I love about it, because now you're talking about asking coaches, and that's what we do in a lot of seminars, to be creative, to don't always have the same drill or exercise for everything you're doing. Now, what's been your experience all the years now that you guys have been doing this? I know bodies are different, individuals are different. You're trying to get the body to feel it. I get that part. What's been your experience? It's been a quicker process for the body to adjust by doing it this way. And, the old theory of, it takes 1,000 times to do something to correct it. Give us your opinion of all this.
Well, it's repetition without repetition. Mm-hmm. I think you have to put in a lot of time, of course, because, Erickson, said 10,000 hours. Now it might be 12, it might be 8, it might be 7, but you have to put in a lot of hours. And it's not necessarily that this way goes quicker, but once you learn it, it's more ingrained in the system. So it's way more stable. And when you get into pressure situations, you don't fall back into the internal stuff, because you don't know that. Because it's never taught to you, so your mind stays fresh on the task at hand or the tactics at hand or whatever. I think it's a different way. It can be quicker, but it's not necessarily quicker. And also, again, going back to the batting tee, if you take away environmental cues that are crucial. And you make everything simpler by putting the ball on a tee, or putting just a simple front toss always through the middle, or even just normal BP straight through the middle. It doesn't resemble the real demands of the sport. And then you might think that he learned a lot, but in the end, if you go to the game, there might be none transfer. So you think mm-hmm. you do it right in the game or in the training, you say, oh, we learned a lot, but do you really know?
Right. And you don't know until it happens in the game.
Yeah. And then a lot of times you say, hey, we practiced this and you were able to do this in practice and now you can't anymore. What's wrong with you? Well, it might not be the the player.
Well, Martin, one of the reasons I started Baseball Outside the Box was because I wanted to bring new innovative ways of teaching and creating skills and drills and teaching games and practices. I go back to my old days. I remember, trying to teach a youngster to do something with their arm or whatever it was and do it over and over for weeks. And like you said, we get into a game and then they go back to the old way. It wasn't working. Now, what I like about this is that it allows you to transfer it into a game and also to deal with the pressure part. I think that was a key that you mentioned there.
Yeah. Like they call it reinvestment. Reinvestment is okay. I did this movement 100,000 times already. and now I get into a pressure situation. Let's say it's a full count, bases loaded, and it's 2-2, two outs. So I have to throw a strike here. Oh, I start doubting myself, right? I have to throw a strike here. Then he goes, okay, how do I throw strikes? And then he goes totally back into something that is totally automated already, but he starts thinking about how he does the movement. And then you use different brain parts, and the chances are that you are going to make errors, and then you might hang the ball or throw a ball. And if you never learned how you were taught the movement internally, there is no way that you can go fall back on that system when you are in that situation, because you don't know. And then, you know, you just do it. And there are a lot of examples out there. Bjorn Borg, the tennis player, he learned himself playing tennis against the garage door. And he just got a coach when he was 18 or 19, and they called him the ice rabbit, you know, when he was in pressure situations, like he wasn't feeling anything and just was having fun. And you know, it goes all the way back to that. And if you see a lot of thinking and, you know, after a pitch, somebody pulls up his elbow or you know, does some movement because you see that he's thinking about, you know, what he's supposed to do, then, you know, there might be some trouble there.
Sure. Martin, let me throw this at you. I was just thinking off the top of my head, I'm thinking, you know, let's take ground balls. I want to throw this at you. Take ground balls. Mm-hmm. Let's say I'm having a problem with my backhand, which a lot of kids do because they don't work, you know, they don't work enough backhands enough. Where would you start? Okay, let's just say it's the first time you're starting to really teach backhand. Would you just start rolling the ball and let them try it for a while and then adjust from there?
Are we talking about guys that never played baseball, or
let's go ahead and take an 11-year-old who's played for a few years. But you know, a lot of times they don't really practice the backhand because they're always told to stay in front of the ball mostly, you know, and feel the ball in front of you as much as you can. I see it a lot when I travel the world. A lot of kids really, you know, they're not being taught the backhand or the forehand to really focus more on a ball hit at you. But you're working on a new skill now.
Yeah. I got this from Gart Orch. I don't know if you know him. He played for the Blue Jays.
Yep.
Great guy. And he was over at a camp, and he said, "Well, so what are you doing?" I tell him, "Well, this is our philosophy." And he said, "You know what we're going to do now is we're going to hit ground balls, but every ground ball, it doesn't matter if it's the backhand or the forehand or straight at them, they have to field it on their backhand."
Mm-hmm.
So if it's on the forehand, they have to come all the way around it and you know, move their feet a lot to be able to feel it on their backhand.
Love it.
And what we always do is we don't roll the ball. We don't we do some fungoing, of course. But what I would like that is always happening is that there's a guy that front tosses the ball, and then the ball is going into the zone, and I hit the ball. And then they have to read my bat angles, and they have to read my body postures. And so, again, they connect vision with action, perception with action, because that's crucial. If I know where the ball is coming, I take decision-making away again.
Yep.
And I learn a lot less. Can you imagine? I feel 10,000 balls where I have to read the ball off the bat of a live thrown ball instead of fungoing. That I know where it's coming, and then you know you can play around with that. Okay, you have to feel everything on your back, and now you have to feel everything on your forehand. And then what we do is we put the clock on. So when the ball is on contact, the clock goes in. And when the ball is at first base, I stop the clock and say, okay, this is 4.5 seconds. We have to do this quicker because, you know, 4.5 seconds on the top level, you know, the guy is mm-hmm. safe. And that's the feedback that you get and that has to be in there. And you see, immediately you see guys making errors that they also make in the game. And then they're starting to get used to, you know, to that modus and then they will become way better. Very quick.
Well, I tell you what, you talk about a clear visual that you just gave. We're talking about, because I want to lead into the final segment of the show, because I want to get into organizing a practice too, because what you basically said right now is you're creating a real game situation for them, and you're doing it early enough where they have to figure out how to get it done by doing it over and over.
Yeah, but with so repetition without repetition.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I love it because the fact that, you know, repetition could also be boring. But let me throw this at you a little bit. It's a curveball, and again, I'm thinking the first thing came to my mind when we first said repetition, be careful with it, is the Japanese, because The Japanese overteach repetition, but boy, are they good.
Yeah, well, we don't have them. So what we did in the end, and I totally get what you're saying, what we did in the end is we looked at, okay, we have like 2,000 kids in the age group where America has 500,000 and mm-hmm. where Japan has 500,000 as well. And in Holland, it's sport number 12. And in Japan and America, it's sport number one. So, okay, all the athletes, what are they doing? They're going to play baseball. So the numbers that they have are crazy. So the level that when they come in is way higher.
Sure.
And then I think that's really crazy what they're doing in Japan.
Well, here's a
and they're good, but so you can get very far by doing repetitions all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer, and I have the whole science backing me up that it's repetition without repetition. And if the Japanese only start training like we do, or in the States they only start training like we do, I think we'll not be in the top four anymore very quick.
Well, I'll tell you what, you hit exactly where I was going, because, you know, let's hope the Japanese aren't listening to the show, because if they make some adjustments, they will. I agree with you. I think they would be much better. And I know we need to do this in the U.S. We've encouraged some of this in the U.S. to get started, because I think what happens a lot of times is we're bigger countries with a lot of athletes, and I agree with that. And what happens is we get complacent and we're good, but we stay with what we're doing. And we're encouraging coaches, just because you're doing really well in your program, don't be satisfied. There's always better ways. And I believe this is a better way. That's why I'm glad you brought that up. Let me ask you this now. When you're talking about practice, let's take a practice organization, in baseball or any sport. Give us an idea how you implement this on a broader scale when you've got a team, when you're not doing the actual individual work.
We have an integrated approach. So let's say I have 16 guys, then four are hitting, and those four that are hitting on the field, they have live BP, and we have hitting lanes out there. So they have, over the shorts, if you take the line, home plate, shortstop, and you take that line to the outfield, you have to hit it right of that. And then we take the second baseman and we do the same there. So we have a big hitting lane through the middle. That's where we want you to hit the ball. And then our BP pitcher just throws everything, fastball, changeup, curveball. And you have to hit it there. Inside, you hit it over the shortstop's head. Outside, you hit it over the second baseman's head. So they have rounds like that. Then we have four guys on the infield that play their position and read the ball off the bat. Mm-hmm. And then we have some pitchers probably shagging. Then we have cage work, where we have two coaches that, they're hitting there. They're live throwing. But maybe not fastball, curveball, but only fastballs. But it's in, out, up, down. And they have to hit with different bats all the time. And a clear goal, you have to hit it in this area. And then I have four guys that are with me fielding. And I describe what we just mm-hmm. did. And then we might have some running on the side, or we might have integrated strength and conditioning as well. So if a guy is standing around with BP, we just let him make a single leg squat or whatever with a dumbbell or with a kettlebell, and then hit. So we created a problem in his body that he has to solve when hitting. So it's very dynamic. It's very creative. And it goes quick. We might do 8 rounds of 15 minutes instead of 4 rounds of 30 minutes. Mm. So we change that up all the time, and we might even do the everybody always uses a clockwork. You go from hitting to shagging to the cage to fielding to hitting again. If you change that up all the time, that's even better, because they have to, they don't know what's coming, and if they have to, they have to pull up their motor movement very quick, the same as in a game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, you have to see it, I guess.
No, I've got the visual. I know our coaches and parents have got the visual, because if I got it, and I love the visual, I love the part about when you talk about, you know, changing it up, making it different. How about this? Let me ask you this. When kids are young, because I believe in this, and I want to get your expert opinion on this. When kids are young, and I know it's not when they're first starting off the first day of baseball, their first time, but let's say after a couple of years they've played the game, aren't we better off giving them more responsibilities when they're younger than waiting to when they get older?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, when they're playing the game.
Yeah, I always tell my kids, you know, if we do it so good that you don't need us anymore, then we're in business. Our goal should be that they play their game and we just assist where needed, but it's their game. So, yeah, I totally agree.
I mean, Martin, I say that because we hear all the time from some of the top players in all sports. The one thing they say all the time is, when I was younger, I failed a lot. And that's how I got better. But nowadays, we don't allow them to fail, especially in the U.S., because we want to control everything.
Yeah, make it easier and simpler than the game is. And then, you know, they think that they learned a lot. No, they have, you know, kids like to create a situation where it's there's a chance that you fail, because that's fun. Because then you can win and the other one fails. So, yeah, I think that's crucial.
Excellent. I love it. And the other thing you brought up, you mentioned something about during hitting, and I've watched some of your videos too. I saw the Japanese do this about 15 years ago, one particular drill, but you have many. You talk about different bats. You know, I know you've used a long bat. You've used shorter bats. Mm-hmm. Maybe explain that a little bit, because I really like that. Also with the high leg kick, because I've used that before, but I didn't know why I was using it.
Well, again, it's chaos training or differential learning. If you change, there's three ways to do it. And they call it the constraint-led approach. You can change the task, you can change the environment, or you can change the body. Though everything happens in that triangle. But I have to perform. All these three play a factor in performing. So if I change one of those three all the time, I will find solutions for movement and being able to get better in the skill. So let's say we're hitting and I use different surfaces. So I use mobile mounts. So I hit uphill, downhill, even on a mattress or normal. What I do is I always create a problem that I have to solve with a clear end result where I have to hit it. So from the feedback outside of my body that comes from it, I will make an adjustment and make those things that needs to be stable to be able to perform. I make that more stable, and where in my body I have to make adjustments, I'll even make that more suitable for making adjustments. And so if I use surfaces or I use different bats or I even pre-fatigue one part of my body, I always create a little problem that I have to solve with a clear end result in mind. And then, you know, I get more robust in my movement.
All right. That is great.
Is that
Yes. And here's the other part I want you to explain. We're coming to the end of the show, and this is there's a lot I know that you do, and we're going to bring it back on at another time, because I think we need to continue this conversation. It's so important. But a couple things. One, If you can explain a little bit about the summit that's coming up. I know that there's a lot of people coming to the summit in Florida. Tell them a little bit about that first before I get into a couple other things.
Well, so I went to the Texas Baseball Ranch in December to speak there because Ron invited me. And I met Randy Sullivan there, and then we got Randy over to Holland because he needed to talk to our medical guys on rehabbing. And, you know, he also, as Ron, is very well in the pitching, and he follows the same philosophy as we do. And we just had some changes. Steve Johnson went to the Cubs, and we had some other guys that leaving. So we brought in some new pitching coaches, and I said, okay, they might listen to me, but they always listen to an American. So let's bring in the guy that we really think is really good. So we brought in Randy, and we were just sitting there, and he says, like, man, I bet you we can make money for the program if we go to the States and do a summit on skill acquisition. So I said, okay, I can get if I get Franz Bosch in, who's a good friend of mine, you know, then we're in business. So I called him up, and he said, yeah, let's do this. So Randy, me thought if we have 40 guys coming, you know, it's a big success. But you know, there's 110, there's 130 in total, but 110 coaches, 13 MLB organizations with 50 pro coaches coming to listen on how we do the stuff that we've just been talking about here on the podcast with Paul Venner, our strength guy, with Bart Hanegraaff, who's the hitting guy. The whole concept of Franz, he's going to explain that. I'm going to talk about training methods and philosophies. Mm-hmm. If you listen to it, it's a like I think Brian Kane calls it a total immersion, where you know it's everything is connected to each other, and you get a very clear overall view on how everything is integrated and how that philosophy of motor learning is the red line through our whole program, and you know you get a lot of clues on how to do that yourself. In your program,
you know, and just so do they go to we'll put it on our website with the podcast, but can they right now, they could probably go to the Florida Baseball Ranch website and register, get more information.
It's floridabaseballranch.com and then /summit.
Great,
but I'm not sure if you can still apply. You have to contact Randy Sullivan if you want to come.
Absolutely. Okay.
Not sure about that anymore, but yeah, it's okay. A great event, and it's fantastic.
No, it sounds awesome, and like I said, I'm afraid I'm going to miss it because I'm going to be in New Zealand.
Yeah, where are you at?
We're going to be in New Zealand. Ron's leaving right from the summit. I believe he's leaving the week, a few days after that, because the summit is the September 8th and 9th.
Yeah, and he's leaving Sunday night, yeah.
He's meeting us in New Zealand. We've got the New Zealand program for the International Sports Group, which I know you've spoken at the EBCA and other places also.
Yeah, cool, yeah.
But we've got that going on otherwise. But don't worry, I will pick Ron's brain when he gets to New Zealand on everything you guys talked about.
Well, we just do another 10 podcasts, you know, and then we'll be fine.
Let me tell you, we're going to continue this because I want to bring on yourself, some other guys, want to continue a series on all this. But here's how I want to finish it, Martin, because, you know, we've been on here an hour, and that's about what the show lasts, but there's so much to talk about. But I know there's stuff we missed. I want you to pick something that you think is important that maybe we didn't discuss, or even just something that you want to tell our coaches, players, and parents around the world. Any advice, last-minute advice you want to give them, and then we'll close it off from there.
We didn't come up with this. There's a lot of research and great reads out there that are easy to read to a certain extent. So that's one thing. Studying is crucial if you want to get better in what you do. And I think we have the responsibility to the kids to do that, because you know we need to provide the best ways of teaching to them. And the second thing is kids get away with behavior all the time, and that should stop as well. So a lot of times we just look away or say, oh, he has a bad day or whatever. If we want to form culture, we have to address it. And then they'll eat out of your hand.
All right. Love it. Martin, I got to tell you, I know you got a busy schedule. I want to thank you for being on the show. Keep doing what you're doing because, you know, I believe that we can learn from everybody in the world when it comes to not just baseball. We can learn from other sports. For sure. So don't keep going with your group. We'll be listening. We'll be following. We'll be spreading the word. Look forward to seeing you. And again, thanks for being on Baseball Outside the Box.
Pete, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun to do.
Well, I loved having you. All right, folks, that is Martin Niehoff with the Dutch Baseball Federation, skills coach. He is develops players, not just in Holland, but also trains coaches. He's heading a summit in Florida, where there are going to be over 100 coaches there, along with 13 major league teams. One of the best in the business. You can get a hold of Martin by going to his Twitter, and you got to get the Twitter. I'm telling you, there's so much great information. Plus, he has interaction with other guys that are experts in different fields, as he mentioned on the podcast. Go to @Martin. Now, Martin is MARTIJN. And remember, we're going to have it on our website. So it's Martin and then Niehoff, NIJHOFF. Go to our website. His Twitter will be there. We want to thank everybody around the world for listening to today's show. Special thanks to Ron, to Martin Niehoff, also to our Lineup Media Group, which is the group that hosts the podcast. Don't forget, special thanks to everyone listening to the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts that love the challenge of status quo. Don't forget to join us on our next show as we continue to travel around the world to talk to different experts in different fields, different parts of the world. We think that's important. So have a tremendous coaching day. Keep learning. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, and I will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.